members with children. If you bring your child to the meeting, then you're responsible for their behavior. If you cannot control your child, please step outside until you have better control. Please silence all your cell phones. And so I guess I'm going to introduce our leader for today, Randall. Thanks, Bebo.
My name's Randy. I'm an alcoholic.
Randy.
Grateful to be sober and be in this meeting. Welcome to our newcomer. Glad you're here. And I just want to start by saying I am very humbled and overwhelmed with gratitude at everyone who showed up tonight. Truly feel the love tonight and support from all of you. And with that being said, my sobriety date is June 11th, 2006. I got sober when I was 20 years old. And when I came to AA, I had problems other than alcohol. And alcohol was not my problem when I got here. And a lot of that had to do with I was raised in Alcoholics Anonymous. My dad's been a longtime member of the program. I grew up going to a lot of meetings. I particularly liked this room. Like when we found this room, I really loved it because somehow it reminded me of old meeting buildings I had been in when I was younger. I don't know exactly where, but you know, I know there was one in Arroyo Grande, and it was up above a guitar shop. And I remember going there upstairs, and you know, I would just be out in the hallway playing with my toys, and I'd always come in and like I would pray out with everybody, And I witnessed, you know, I witnessed AA growing up. You know, I witnessed people detoxing from alcohol and being sponsored by my dad and being kind of weaned off of alcohol. And we'd go to some, like, sordid places, you know. We'd go to, like, these wino camps and I'd see people that were living on the streets. And my dad would be there carrying a message to them. You know, never in all my drinking and doing other things did I think I had a problem with alcohol, you know, because I had that image of, you know, real alcoholics, you know, chronic alcoholics. You know, alcohol for me was magical. Alcohol for me was, I don't know, it was a solution. You know, it was the first mind-altering chemical I ever tried. And when I tried it, it was just a big release. You know, I was free. I felt okay. I was all by myself, and I felt okay because being a young child growing up, I just always wanted to be somewhere else with a different family, doing something else. We moved a lot, so I was always bouncing around to different schools, always getting in a little trouble at school, you know, acting out and getting attention and you know, didn't have any really stability. Growing up, didn't have any structure, you know, and was raised by my dad and didn't know my mother growing up. And there was always a different woman in our lives that was a mother figure for me. I know my dad did the best he could with what he knew. And I say that a lot. I always say that when I share. And you know, my childhood wasn't terrible, but it wasn't the greatest either. So when I found alcohol, it was that was it. That was the ticket. You know, it was freedom. I felt like I heard people say I felt 10 foot tall and bulletproof, you know. And I was dancing around my room and I drank a lot that night and woke up, was sick the next morning and swore I'd never do it again, you know. And I think that was a pattern for me. Like anything I ever tried, any drug or anything I ever tried, I told myself I was never going to do that again. Why do people do this? You know, and then it wouldn't be long and I'd be doing it again. Maybe I did it wrong or something, you know. Maybe it'll be different this time, you know. Progressively, my disease kind of kept me from achieving anything, you know. Drinking and doing other things kept me from wanting to aspire to be anything. It kept me from, you know, I wasn't trying in school. I started ditching school a lot, and wanting to party and wanting to be just someone else still. You know, it's like it wasn't fixed. It just wasn't fixing everything. It wasn't fixing everything. I wanted to be cool. I wanted to sell drugs. I wanted to be at the parties with the bottle in my hand. Like, I wanted to have this image, and I tried real hard to have that image. But what started happening was, is I started doing things that were kind of embarrassing. You know, I'd be at house parties in high school, and, you know, I'd come to wrapped around the toilet, and I don't know if someone pissed on me or I pissed on myself, you know, and just like scavenging the next morning around these parties to pour beers together and keep drinking and keep it going. And ultimately what happened where my alcoholism took me was being on the streets. You know, I burned a lot of bridges. I took advantage of family that tried to help me. And there was no pulling the covers over their eyes. You know, my family is a lot of people in AA, people in the disease, you know, maintaining in their disease. And two of my biggest, you know, go to my aunt and uncle, I'd always go to them and, like, knock on their door, you know, and let me crash, let me stay here for a while. And they'd be like, okay, but you got to get your shit together. You know, you got to stop hanging out with those friends and stop doing those things, and you got to start talking different, dressing different, acting different. And I'd be like, okay, you know, because I got my butt kicked, you know. I'd be like, all right, I'll do it. And, you know, it would be, for me, being sober was drinking tall boys and smoking weed. Like, if I could do that, it was okay, you know. If I could just stick to that, I'd be all right. And I'd get a little job and work for a few weeks and get that first paycheck, and then I'd split, you know, I'd be off and running again. And never did I think alcohol was a problem. Never did I think that I couldn't see how that would always set the ball rolling, you know. And when I came to this program, having all those ideas that I had, being raised in AA and hearing one person's opinion of how things are done around here, I would argue with people. I was in detox because I ended up at the shelter and missed, you know, I stayed out partying one night, came back to the shelter the next day. I did that a couple times, and then I was gone like 3 nights and came back, and they're like, no, they kicked me out. They said the only way I was going to get back into the shelter was to go through detox. So I got into detox and started coming to these meetings, and these counselors in detox or people that work there, they would like, tell me, you got to say you're an alcoholic. No, I'm not saying I'm an alcoholic. I know what an alcoholic is, and you know, just all these ideas that I had, you know, all these beliefs that were ingrained in me, you know, and I was just fighting the whole way. It's like, I got nowhere else to turn, but I'm going to come in here and you guys give me a bed and a safe place to stay, because I was tired of being out there and really scared. You know, I wouldn't have admitted it at the time, but I was really scared to be out on the streets. And I'm going to argue with these people and kick and fight. And back then it was a 21-day program, and I made it 6 days and got kicked out. And went and smoked some cigarettes in the park and talked to this girl that was in the shelter that I was, you know, seeing at the time. And she told me to go back and talk to them, and they would let me back in. So I did. They let me back in the next day. I got kicked out again, you know, because I was really just vulgar and disrespectful to this girl. I yelled at her, was cussing in the hallway, and you know, dude, you got to go. So here I go with all my possessions in a hefty bag. That's all I had, you know, and walking down to the Alano Club. Because in that time that I was in detox, I ran into Gussie, and Gussie and my dad used to go together, and she told me, you know, when you get out of detox, come see me. I run recovery homes. So I found her, and I don't know, my recovery is just like one God shot after another, one door after another just opening up, you know, and she took me to Asa. She took me out to the ranch and made some fried chicken, and I don't know, man, I felt safe, but I was so not used, I don't know, I just wasn't used to it. It's not like I wasn't loved and I didn't know what love was, but it's just like, you're not family to me, and it's kind of like, it kind of makes me think, like, tonight, you know, there's a lot of love in here tonight, and it's just in these rooms, you know, we see, you know, we have a bond in here that you're not going to find anywhere else. You know, not like this. And she had an attachment to me, because she knew me as a small child, and because I was in detox and I was suffering, and she used to call me a street urchin. So she, this little street urchin, you know, she just took me under her wing, and I didn't have the money for that to stay in ASA, you know, and I didn't, you know, my family wasn't going to give me the money to stay there, so I was a godbed in ASA, and I thank God for that, because, you know, getting kicked out of detox, I probably wouldn't be here today if it didn't happen like that. You know, maybe I would have showed up later. I don't know. You know, I used to think if I ever relapse, if I ever get loaded, I won't make it back. And that's bullshit, because I'm powerless over my disease. I don't know what's going to happen. You know, so that Godbed, all I know is that Godbed was what I needed at that time. You know, and I got a foundation in that house. And, you know, we were up reading the big book every morning and going to meetings, and I was an ANDA. And I'd say, my name's Randy, I'm an alcoholic and an addict. And I don't know what it really came down to, but I remember one day I was talking with Gussie, and I think I was just arguing that I'm not an alcoholic. And part of me was hanging on to this reservation to drink again, you know, because again, that was my solution. It was magical, it was great, it was awesome. And you know, the drugs are what brought me here. The drugs are why I was on the streets. The drugs are why I steal and I lie and do all this stuff. You know, and I remember one day I'm arguing with Gussie about something. And she says, well, honey, what happens when you drink? And I said, I black out. Now, that doesn't make me an alcoholic just because I black out. But what it did was get me a little honest and start the process of me coming to believe that I am an alcoholic. You know, just like that. That experience I had when I was 10, when I first drank, that feeling that came over me, that same feeling, a similar feeling came over me when I read the doctor's opinion. And I was almost relieved to find out that I have an obsession of the mind coupled with a physical allergy. That once I take a drink, that phenomenon of craving kicks in. And that was a relief to find that out, because otherwise, without knowing that, it's like I'm baffled. I'm like, why do I keep doing this? Why do I would come to and I would come down with nowhere to go, just walking aimlessly, like, how did I do this again? How did I blow another job? How did I blow another relationship? How did I get kicked out of here again? Why does this keep happening to me? So I was relieved when I found out that I have an obsession of the mind, that this head tells me that this time it's going to be different. You know, this time some amount of money or some woman or some control, something's going to make it different, you know? And this process of recovery started happening, and coming to meetings and hearing your guys' experience and hearing you share, you know, at the very beginning, I was resistant to what you had to offer in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was resistant to spiritual principles. I was resistant to God. I was resistant to a lot of things, and that started, the only thing that started tearing that resistance down was identification. I would identify with you. I would identify with your stories. I would think, man, I had those same feelings. Man, I did that too. You know, and that only happened by coming to a lot of meetings. So if you're new or relatively new, I suggest you come to a lot of meetings. I was doing 3 or 4 a day. I didn't have a job. I didn't have nowhere else to go. You know, it's easy to say, yeah, the programs that I was living in made me come to meetings, and I would, you know, stomp my feet sometimes when I didn't feel like it. But in reality, had it not been for that, you know, I would have been in that many meetings because I had nothing else going for me. And, you know, I started to, like I said, I just came to believe, you know, and got a sponsor at the suggestion of the house I was living in, and, you know, started doing the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have had a couple relapses in my recovery, once at 30 days and once at 7 months. And the one at 7 months was a violation of my probation, and it ended me in jail for the first time. And I'd been handcuffed before. I'd been in, you know, holding cells, and I'd been questioned and stopped on the streets and all this stuff. But, like, jail was a whole nother experience, you know, that I didn't like. Some people can do it. They're like, yeah, let's, you know, I'm going to jail, see all my homeboys, and whoop-de-whoop. But me, I was like, hell no, this sucks. I don't want to be here. You know, I just didn't like it. And I think that really opened my eyes, too. And I was fortunate enough to get a big book from the guy who did the STP program in there. You know, I wasn't in long enough to get enrolled in STP, but I was in long enough to see him get a big book, and I was reading it. And you know, magic started happening. There's no other way I could describe it. The miracle started happening, you know. And it's a process, you know. And I came out of there, and I got picked up from people in the program, some friends that I made, and, you know, was bouncing around from couch to couch for a while, and I went to the shelter for a while, and, you know, got a little job, and just kept coming back. You know, I had Prop 36 and probation and checking in at court, and, you know, meanwhile, all these fines and fees are building up, you know, and I don't know, it seemed overwhelming at the time, but one day at a time, I just kept coming back and just kept chipping away at it, you know, and things started taking care of themselves, you know, and I think a real turning point for me was getting some time and getting known and getting recognized, and people already kind of knew who I was because of my dad, you know, and I think when I was new, I had this stigma maybe that followed me around, like, oh, is he going to be like his dad? That might just be me, but I think I kind of had that, you know? And I don't know, I think it worked in my favor because people would talk to me, you know? And reach out to me, you know? And I was young. I was so young when I got here, you know? And I was thinking about that the other night. I went in a panel on detox and I was looking around all the people in detox, and I was like, man, I've spent a good chunk of my life in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's been 7 years. I was 18 when I walked in the doors, you know, 20 when I stayed sober. And I don't know, just this thing just stuck, you know, it just stuck. But I had to take some action, you know, I had to keep coming back. So back to, you know, come back to Santa Maria, got out of jail, come back to Santa Maria, bounce around from couch to couch, staying at the shelter. And, you know, progressively, my recovery, I just kept moving forward, I guess. You know, I just kept moving forward. And when one door would close, another door would open. You know, if I got kicked out of somewhere, I'd stay somewhere else. And, I went from the shelter to the Good Samaritan Sober Living Home for men and was working at Red Lobster at the time. And then I got a good job out on the base. And the Good Samaritan Home, they charged, their rent was based on your income. So it was like 30% of your income. So it was like $150 to live in a house with 8 guys and share a room with somebody. Well, then I got a job on the base. And then it was like $650 to live in a house with 8 guys and share a room with somebody. And I was like, no, that's not cool. So I left and went and lived with Elijah, and, you know, things were going good, things were really good, and, started getting sobriety time, you know, started, I don't remember when it was, but I remember sitting with Ronnie at the Alano Club, and we were talking to somebody, and he was like, you know, they were like, they had their own idea, you know, their own plan, and Ronnie's like, okay, dude, you don't want to listen to the people with time, and that was such, like, that had such an impact on me that I was someone with time that could carry a message or could try to help this person struggling in recovery. Like, I don't even, it just hit me so hard. And I was like, just on a high from that. Because when I got here, this many people wouldn't show up to hear me speak. When I got here, I felt like nobody. I felt like a piece of shit, you know. And my life started taking on meaning. And you know, I am loved today and appreciated, and my message is welcome. My presence is welcome, you know. And so life's going on. I got this job at the base, and I was in this relationship. And this, I think I worked out of the base like 3 years. And in that time, that relationship ended. And I got into a little... I started to get a little, not isolated, but not going to as many meetings and acting on character defects. Mm-hmm. And which, you know, not even like It's just what we do. It's what I did. It's what a lot of us do. You know, I was hurt. And so hurt people hurt people, you know. I'm still sober, but I'm going to like 2 meetings a week and fixing on outside things. Using outside things to fix what's going on the inside. You know, I'm not calling my sponsor that much. I'm not, I don't have any commitments. I'm sponsoring guys, but I'm just telling them a bunch of like just BS that's up here. You know, like I'm directing them. I'm not sponsoring them. You know, I'm telling them just a bunch of crap, really. And I don't know if anybody else experienced that in like 2, 3, 4 years, but that's what I was doing. And, you know, pretty much the same person and same attitude and cockiness and pride that I had when I walked in here, you know. And, you know, some things happened that were really out of my control. You know, I blew the heads of my car, and that wasn't out of my control. I could have taken care of that car and got it fixed or whatever, but that made it hard for me to get back and forth to work. And, you know, my boss let me go because, you know, I was really out there just not really taking care of business. You know, I'd sit in the office all the time on the computer, and, you know, they were just tired of me. So I got fired from that job. The house I was living in caught on fire. I'm sitting at the Alano Club with me, Charles, and this guy I was sponsoring. Like, what am I going to do now? You know? And it was like when I was brand new all over again, you know? And I share that because the people in Alcoholics Anonymous, the people in the recovery community, the fellowship just came and loved me, you know, and helped me so much in that hard time, you know. And I was, Carl and Duffy opened their doors for me, you know. Some people in the program put together a little fund to help me get some clothes because everything was ruined, you know, in my house. And and I got a job back at Red Lobster because in recovery I learned how to put in notice and, you know, and because the general manager was in recovery herself. So, you know, I got my job back at Red Lobster and started building again, started rebuilding, started seeing Liz. We started dating and just started rebuilding, you know. And then the big one hit and a couple family members died, you know. I got a call that my cousin hung himself, and he's one of us, and he got sober for a while and hadn't talked to him in a long time. I have this bad habit of not calling my family. You know, I never call them. I figure they don't want to see me, or so I don't know what it is, but it's still kind of there. You know, I figure they don't want to hear from me. No news is good news kind of stuff or whatever. But I get this call. My cousin hung himself. He was one of us. He was sober, joined the army, went into combat, came back, wasn't the same. He was relapsing. I don't remember if he got deployed again or if he hung himself before he went again. And so I'm on the way to his funeral with Liz, and that's when, you know, I got a call from Ronnie that my stepmom died on the way to this funeral. And it's like, you know, that was a real, I always share about that because that was like those things happening in that 6 months was like just overwhelming. And I want to demonstrate the power of Alcoholics Anonymous, the power of the fellowship, that no matter what happens, if your ass falls off, you don't have to pick up. No matter what happens, you don't have to pick up. There's no excuses, you know. We read a story in a meeting last night. This guy lost his dad, his brother, his kid to the disease, and still stayed sober. And no matter what happens, I'm not alone. No matter what happens, I got a higher power. I've got a fellowship to come to, and we care. I'm telling you, I'm a punk-ass kid that walked off the streets, sagging my pants. You know, if you turned your back on me, I would steal your shit. You know, no respect, and you guys still love me. You know, and when I was all arrogant and cocky and doing whatever the hell I wanted to, and, you know, just being an asshole, and everything came crashing down, you guys still loved me. And you were still there for me, still supported me. And, you know, I owe my life, my sobriety, everything to this program, to you people, you know, even if you're new, because there was new people then. It's like this, it's like a constant circle in recovery, you know. And So we went and I did that funeral. My uncle, he's one of the family members that's in the program, and he's got like 30 years, and he didn't have to drink. He didn't have to drink. He just buried his son, you know. And I couldn't imagine like having like what my dad went through of tossing and turning and wondering if I'm going to be dead or in prison or what's going to happen to me because I'm out running amok on the streets and partying. And, you know, he went through that and then had that hope of his son being in sobriety, and now he's gone, you know. But no matter what, we don't have to pick up that drink, no matter what happens. And I didn't have to. Just started rebuilding, and my relationship with Liz grew, and we got married, you know. And I don't know, I couldn't be happier today. I really couldn't be happier. I'm not going to say that Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a life beyond my wildest dreams. I can still get there, but I have a really good life, you know, as far as I'm concerned. And a lot of it has to do with attitude, and a lot of it has to do with my perspective, you know, because you know, I'm not waking up in bushes anymore. I'm not breaking into vacant houses to sleep or to get loaded or do any of the shady, dark stuff that I was doing before. I'm not living like that no more. You know, I don't feel the same demoralization that I felt when I was out there. I don't feel that anymore. I don't have that fear that I had. You know, I have freedom today. And I have freedom because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because of recovery. And what I do today is I sponsor guys, and I made a decision recently to get a new sponsor and start working more steps, you know, to do something a little different, because I need to continue to grow. I need to continue to change and grasp and develop recovery, to grasp and develop a spiritual way of life. You know, to continuously change and move forward. You know, because if I'm not moving forward, I'm moving backwards. I don't want to be back isolating, using outside things to fix what's going on the inside. I don't want to be that no more. And I can do it so quickly, you know, and it, without even realizing it. And that's just my disease, you know, manifesting in other ways. And that's something that was kind of like, I don't know, like I knew I was doing, you know, things that weren't spiritual, and I knew I was acting on character defects, but I didn't know it was an obsession until recently. I didn't know that it was a manifestation of my disease until recently, you know, until I started reading some new literature, and I really had this, like, I had another spiritual awakening, and to admit that I'm powerless over something besides drugs or alcohol was, like, a big relief for me, you know? It was a big relief, and in doing that, you know, I can get some power because the other steps will follow. You know, and I'll seek my God in that situation, and you know, take inventory of it, get honest about it, and so on and so forth. You know, and I don't know, nothing I can. The only way I can pay back what I have today is to keep doing what I'm doing right now. You know, suit up, show up, and continue to carry a message. You know, continue to be of service, and you know, and I want anyone who's new or relatively new to know, even if I don't know you, if I haven't talked to you, I love you, and that's something that is a result of being so desperate and being loved. You know, because I know what it's like. I know how I felt when I got here, and. You know, just a real quick story to backtrack. I remember when Gussie took me out to the ranch, we stopped at the post office. And she ran out. She's like got a cigarette in her hand. She's running in the post office. And she left. And I got like 6 days, 7 days right out of detox. And she runs into the post office. And she's got her purse, her phone, and the car's running. And I'm sitting there with my hands on my lap, like looking forward, because I don't even want her to think for 1 second that I don't even want to tempt myself to tempt my disease to like take anything and bolt, you know? That's the kind of love that saved my life, you know? It's just that trust, that love. And if you're new, I hope you can receive that. I hope you're open to receiving that, you know? And it might take some time, you know? This might not be this might not be it for you. You know, you might have to go back out there and drink some more or do whatever some more. But know that recovery is a process. And sometimes part of our process, like mine, was relapse. Sometimes part of our process is going backwards instead of forwards. Sometimes part of our process is having 2 years sober and staying at the shelter, you know, like I did. Sometimes, that's just part of the process. But I tell you that for me, it has gotten better. And there's going to be, you know, I'm married now, and the future of having a family and, you know, really getting into a career, I know things are going to get hard. It's not always going to be great. And nobody promised me that life would be fucking great all the time and outstanding. But I know that whether it's good or bad, whether things are going great or they're not, that I can get loaded no matter what if I step away from doing the right actions, if I step away from the program, because that little voice is always there. Because the magic is always there talking to me. It's going to tell me this time it's going to be different. It's going to be okay. And I can get that relief. You know? So I got to stay close. The longer I stay sober, I realize I got to stay closer. And, you know, it's just one day at a time. And I have a lot of hope for the future. And if I when I have a life beyond my wildest dreams, you guys will know, because I'll be living on like 100 acres with a private shooting range, and I'll be taking elaborate fishing and hunting trips every month, and, you know, and that's possible. That's possible. So I'm sticking around for that and for another day of sobriety. Thanks.
Another round. Thank you, everyone, for attending the Golden Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Can I see some hands of some people who would like to help Arlene clean up? Thanks, guys.
We'll be down in 5 minutes.
Service helps us stay sober. And Billy, would you like to lead us out of prayer?
After a moment of silence for the alcoholic inside or outside of this room still suffering, and for the alcoholics inside and outside of this room that are embracing recovery, please join me in the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever and ever. Amen. Keep coming back, and it works if we work it.
Work it because you're worth it. Yes, you did. Excellent.
Have some time, Heidi, or go have coffee, or oh, God.
I can't figure out how to turn it out. Oh, yeah.